Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today I host Eric Lippert, head professional at Pebble Beach Golf Links. The interview was thanks to a visit to this year's U.S. Open host, Pebble Beach. I was there for a couple nights and got to play all the golf courses over there. The opportunity to play was thanks to an event with our official apparel partner, Summit Brands, makers of BeDratty, Fairway and Green, Zero Restriction, and EPNY. It was their annual event, The Summit, which is a pro member event they have held at Pebble for 9 years running. It was a really classy event, awesome time, a couple different formats. It was neat. They did a low gross, a net event, and then also a pro Stableford. So it was a fun mix, an awesome time getting to play those golf courses and, you know, meet some of the pros from all over the country that stock their stuff in their shops. This was actually my first time playing Pebble Beach, which was an experience I was excited to play with the upcoming U.S. Open. And obviously, I'll delve into much more in written form, but, you know, a few takeaways from Pebble is having watched it on TV my entire life and having walked it but not really played is it's amazing how small the greens are. You get over shots, and I was playing pretty good golf, and you can't help but get intimidated even from the center of fairways with wedges in your hands at how small these greens are, knowing you miss. And, you know, then another aspect of the stuff that gets the course that gets overlooked because of the coverage and the way TV flattens things is how penalizing the bunkers are around the greens. Are extremely deep. The scale doesn't really show on TV. With that also, I was unbelievably impressed with the land movement on the golf course. The way the fairways roll and slant, right? You're never really hitting a shot from a flat lie, which makes hitting it into those small greens even more difficult. So I think that's kind of when I think about championship golf and testing the pros, it's a great recipe when you have intimidating and small targets to approach to and very difficult lies in the fairway where you're not comfortable because you're never hitting from a really flat lie. I think we see it at Augusta. Obviously, those greens are big, but the targets and the shelves are really small, and you see these pros hitting from lies that are, you get a ball a foot above your stance, and it's just really tough. I think that brings doubt and makes it so much different than hitting a ball off a flat lie on the range. A couple other things just I noticed, I never had really believed how difficult that par 5 14th is, but my God, that's got to be the hardest par 5 in the entire world. The way the fairway cambers away from you, kind of, for those that don't know, the tee shot's really uncomfortable. It's blind. And then the fairway, if you miss that fairway, you're just dead. It's so I ended up, I made a par on it, but I had to get up and down. I was hitting like a 3-iron into the green because I missed the fairway. And another thing I noticed, the 18th tee shot, not easy. Not as easy as the pros make it look on TV. You don't really have a lot of space to hit it, especially with the way they've narrowed the fairway. The fairway's narrowed up to where the tree is on the right. So if you don't, you really gotta kind of hit a good shot or else you're dead. And that OB kind of creeps in on the right. So it'll be interesting to see. I saw this year at the AT&T, a lot of guys weren't even hitting driver. They just said, hey, I'm just going to make it a 3-shot hole. But it'll be with the U.S. Open fairway widths. I mean, they're really narrow on a bunch of holes. And even playing it with short rough for resort play, which was, you know, about 2.5 inches, I couldn't believe how thick and damp that rough gets. So when we see it up to 5 inches, it's going to be, if you miss those fairways, you're not going to have a fun time at the U.S. Open. So I'll put much more thoughts into my experience over there at Pebble and the golf course and what it means for this year's U.S. Open. But I can't thank Summit Brands enough for the event. It was unbelievable. And they will be in the U.S. Open merchandise tent this year at Pebble Beach, which is a big deal. You know, one cool thing from their brands is Fairway and Green, all their men's tech polos are made in the U.S., and a portion of the proceeds from purchases on those polos are given back to Folds of Honor. So every year they cut a big check to Folds of Honor, which is a really great cause. And if you don't have their gear stocked in your favorite pro shop, do us a favor and tell your pro to stock it. And if you don't want to have a club logo or your local course logo, check out the Fried Egg Pro Shop, where we have Beach Ready polos, t-shirts, and some Fairway and Green pullovers. So without further ado, here is Pebble Beach Pro Eric Lippert. We talk about a lot of things ranging from his journey to being the pro at Pebble Beach to this year's U.S. Open.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Four years at Pebble Beach, yep. 16 years with the company. How did you get your start at Pebble Beach?
You know, oddly enough, I started at Pebble Beach back in 98, not here specifically, but at Del Monte Golf Course. And the head pro who I replaced here actually was the head professional at the time at Del Monte. I was just out of college and trying to play a little, and I needed to make some money. So my family had moved over here and it seemed like the right place to get a job. So I worked for about a year with the company at Del Monte, and then took off to continue to try to pursue a playing career. Obviously, I had a lot of weekends off, which is bad if you're trying to play for a living. So at that point, I decided to come back and teach school. And I really enjoyed teaching and, you know, grade school. I thought I would do that. And in the interim, though, I didn't have my teaching credentials. So I worked at a golf course, and that turned into going back to Del Monte. But I worked at Spanish Bay as well for a little bit. So I kind of got my entry back into the company in 2003.
How long did you try and play for?
You know, in my head, about 10 years. On paper, I probably played fully committed about 4 years. You know, I played on the Canadian Tour the last 2 years I was playing, and, you know, had some minor success here and there, but probably had more success actually as a PGA professional while I was working at Del Monte in terms of a playing career as well. Had a couple good seasons that turned into being able to play in the PGA Championship in 2009. And also being part of the PGA Cup team in 2009. So those were things I thought would never, you know, they far superseded any goals I had after 2003 for playing.
Do you think the balance of, you know, working and playing actually helped you play, in 2009 when you had a really good year?
What really helped me actually was being a parent. It created kind of a situation where it wasn't the most important thing in the world was how I played golf. And so, you know, I kind of had that enjoyment again that I had been missing for a while. And so when I would go out and play, I would have fun. I'd have really good rounds, or I'd play just kind of eh, but the really good rounds, I just enjoyed playing so much better and competing that I was able to really shoot some lower scores when I got playing well. Better than I could shoot lower scores than I did when I was actually playing full time, seemed like, more often.
The perspective of, you know, with life, I think, is so big. I think about that all the time. It's like, yeah. I got better at golf as I got older because it's just like maturity. Sometimes I think like it might be smart for some kids to wait to go play pro, you know, and work a little while because of the perspective.
Well, I think so. I think that you're probably onto something there. I think, you know, technically and physically, obviously I was would say I was better earlier, could do more things, but you know, it's kind of staying within it's that mental side of that game that everybody talks about, that it's that maturing of that portion, you know, where you know, you do one thing and do it really well and you can still have some success. But to your point, yeah, a lot of these guys should probably be waiting and if nothing else, finding an appreciation for what life is really like versus coming out of college and trying to go straight to playing on tour and not really having any perspective on the reality of what 99.9% of people do.
It's like a bad day playing on the PGA Tour is a pretty good day.
Yeah, yeah. They still let you eat and the food's pretty good.
Where did you play college golf at?
I played down in Southern California at Division II school, Cal State San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. I played 2 years there. I took a little time to get going in college. So I
nothing wrong with that.
You know, it's just, you know, you got to see the world.
Life's a journey.
It is. And I'm a traveler.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, what were your best moments from your playing career?
You know, leaving college, my last year of college, I started playing some really good golf. I won a couple of tournaments leading into our national championship when we played nationals. I had won the tournament, the qualifying tournament, to get there by about 8 strokes. Had some great, you know, just started to win tournaments by a lot of strokes, you know. So that was really, really kind of fun. And then, you know, later down the road, you know, I had some couple good scores, couple good rounds in on the Canadian Tour, and started to kind of get a little bit of a feel for what I was doing out there. And had some difficulty the next year, and so that kind of led to me, you know, mm-hmm. calling it quits. You know, I tied the course record in Del Monte back in, I want to say 2008, shot a 61 with a bogey on the last hole. So, you know, I was shooting for 59. I was trying. And then
that's
obviously,
decent.
Yeah, well, it was good.
61's okay.
It was good. You know, there's not one golfer alive that probably has ever been satisfied with the score they shot. Cause I think about that round And the funny thing is as good as it is, and no matter what anybody I know, that's the first question they ask. Well, what? How'd you make your bogey here? Do you remember when you were gonna shoot 59 and you hit it over by the bathroom? And you say, "Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah,
pretty much I do. I think about it every single day."
See, well, I think that
I don't,
you hit
but...
hit on like the best part about golf is like you win a golf tournament and you still are like, "Wow, I should have shot." So
yeah,
a couple shots better. I left a few out there.
Yeah.
And that's satisfying. Like, people always want to make it easier, dumb it down. But the beauty of golf is like the unattainable perfection.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Right. Well, what's a perfect score is 18 under, right? If you birdie every hole. Maybe. Some people would say par because par is what it's set at and what you're expected to do. But I would say a perfect score would be to birdie every hole.
Yeah. Your day-to-day here at Pebble, what's it like being a head pro at Pebble? What are your kind of day-to-day operations, and maybe how is that different than, you know, your peers around the area?
A lot of coffee and a lot of hours. We always joke we work half days, you know, because there's, you know, 12 hours is, you know, half a day. But anywho, you know, day-to-day, there's no set routine. I wouldn't say that. You meet a lot of interesting people. And I think probably the best part about my job is the excitement people have when they come in to play Pebble Beach. It's, you know, it's such a unique property and it's such a unique place in that, you know, here we are. We're 100 years old this year, right? We're celebrating our centennial. And the course, for the most part, you know, the layout's been pretty well untouched, right? You know, maybe the extension of the way back when it first was built of the 18th hole, turning it into a par 5 and just a couple tees here and there and some green complexes. But, you know, it's just a unique, unique place. And everybody that's ever played the game has been here, right? And people aspire to get here and to play here. And that's a great thing. And so our job really, and the pleasure, but also the difficulty is making sure that we live up to that standard that they've set in their mind and meeting that expectation, if not generally exceeding it, right? So that's always the goal. And so that's our biggest challenge, right? Is that you got to think people have been saving to come here. golfers have. And I think another thing that's interesting about Pebble Beach too is when you, if you go into anywhere you go, I should say, I don't know, wherever it is, you go into a bowling alley, go into your 7-Eleven, whatever you want to call it, and then say something about the word Pebble Beach, people know whether they golf or not. You know, but if, I mean, yeah, Augusta, all those are great properties and people know about them, but they're still more golf-centric type people, you know, maybe the Masters, but you know, when you talk about Pebble Beach, oh yeah, my uncle wants to go, even if they're not a golfer, their uncle or their aunt or their anybody, they've heard about it and they're interested in it. So it's a unique place that way. And so that's what we experience on a day-to-day basis, people who aspire to get here. And it's our job to make sure that we meet their expectations. Well, not meet, but exceed them.
Yeah, that excitement of somebody on the first tee, you know, their first time. I just played it for my first time the other day. Yeah. And it's pretty unbelievable. You watch it on TV for so long and you see, you know, since I was a kid. And there's just some stuff that you don't really expect to wow you as much as it does when you watch it so much. Like, you know, the TV, I think almost like it flattens the property. It doesn't show how much movement there is in the property. And I mean, like those cliffs are something else.
Yeah.
What would you say is your favorite stretch on the course? Maybe underrated stretch. Not the one that everybody's going to go to.
Well, if you're saying underrated in terms of difficulty, right? I would say 12, 13, and 14 is very, to say it's underrated, I don't know in terms of the difficulty part, but you know, generally people point to 8, 9, 10 as that real difficult stretch, but you know, I think 12, 13, 14 is there's a lot of teeth in that, especially when we start talking about, you know, the US Open, which we have coming up here, 80 days away, I think. But
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, we decided to go ahead and host it. We're gonna go forward with it. So, yeah, just in, we might as well host it. You know, that's gonna happen. So,
kind of nice it matched up with your 100 year.
It just seems to have worked, right?
Yeah.
No, that's a special relationship with USGA, and so that's a great thing for us and that we shared. So, so that's fantastic. But to your point, you know. 13 from that back tee, there's a tee back there that into the wind. I mean, it's hard to almost get it past that cross bunker, which seems, you know, obsolete when you're on the normal tee box.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 12, I mean, that's such a hard par three. It's such a narrow front to back hole with that giant bunker on the front left that you just, what shot do you hit in there and still try to hold that green? I mean, 2/3 of it is really difficult to get it close. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, then you go to obviously the 14, which is just a beast of a par five. And so that's a great stretch right there.
Yeah, it is. It's an awesome stretch. I think like one of the things I couldn't believe was how small the greens are out here.
Yeah.
It's like you see it on TV. You can tell like when best players in the world are missing greens, but then you get out and you're having to hit the shots and you're like, oh my God, this is tiny. Like, yeah. If I miss left, I'm in a really deep bunker. If I miss right, I'm in a really deep bunker. Having played in a major championship, from a day-to-day course setup to a major, what would you estimate the differences in shots of difficulty?
Well, I mean, I think it's an unfair comparison when you talk about a regular day versus a major championship. I mean, obviously, when you look out here, and we've narrowed the fairways tremendously already. So right now, playing it, you'll get some of that experience, but the rough isn't at its, you know, its resort height. It's not at its, you know, 3.5-4 inch. I mean, it's just not grown out to that extent that it's going to be as penal as it will be in the tournament. You know, but what we have and what we're lucky, and quite frankly, I don't know that anybody's actually done this. I think it's the first time is that in the last year, we've had an AT&T, you know, or actually you start back with the U.S. Amateur, but we had a U.S. Amateur. Mm-hmm. Then we have, you know, the PGA Champions Tour out here in September. And then we host the first, the AT&T and now the U.S. Open. So in a stretch of less than a year, you're really hitting on a lot of different types of events, but all major, you know, championships and professional championships. And so the reason I bring that up is all four of those, the golf course is different, in terms of setup and how it's played and the way it's laid out. And of course, you know, it's still a resort course. So on a daily basis, you get great conditions, a great golf course, but much more user friendly than your major championships, like
especially the USAM Open.
Yeah, yeah. The AM was a little was we didn't narrow in the fairways there, but it was a lot more intense with the rough, and the firmness. But man, the Open, that's just a whole different world.
Yeah, I was standing out there. I played okay yesterday, but I was thinking, I was like, God, with 5-inch rough, I don't know if I could even get it around out here.
Yeah,
it's a whole nother beast.
Now for a quick word from our sponsors. Today's episode is powered by TD Ameritrade. Whether on the course or in the market, it helps to have a second set of eyes to keep you on your game. That's why TD Ameritrade's trade desk is here to help gut check your strategies so you always feel confident teeing up a trade. Visit tdameritrade.com/friedegg to learn more about what their trade desk can do for you. Member SBIC.
How will the weather be different from, say, the AT&T year in, year out, which is in February, versus the U.S. Open in June?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. The likelihood of rain is obviously almost null, right? It's just it rarely rains. We generally, I say that, as of course, it sprinkled today, right? So, but you know, June won't really rain. You know, there's a possibility of some fog that time of year. If we get fog, it's generally in that time frame, just due to the fact that the weather inland is so warm, and it heats up all the deep cold ocean water that's out here, and you get that little marine layer. So I think if there's anything weather related, it's simply just some fog, which is much better than what you experience maybe in the Midwest when you get the thunderstorms for that time of year. So we'll take a little fog over a thunderstorm and
rain.
And
rain lets you keep the greens firm, or no rain lets you keep the greens firm too.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the fog. I mean, that's the tough thing, is that fog makes it, you know, that kind of dense air will make it play longer, which is
absolutely,
you know, it's a it'll be. Do you expect, so with Pebble, with the AT&T, we see so many of guys that are, you know, great approach players, obviously, with the small greens. Would you expect to see the same type of players succeed, you know, in June as the ones that we typically see play well in at the AT&T?
Well, you know, so first of all, everybody that's won the U.S. Open here, I shouldn't say everybody, all, but I think Graham McDowell is the only one that didn't, has all won an AT&T as well. You know, so Tom Kite.
Good stat.
Yeah, that is. It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, that. you've got Jack, Tom Watson, Tom Kite, Tiger Woods, and right, if Phil Mickelson can pull it off, well then there you go. I mean, he's won as many as Marco Mira now. So,
and but, DJ would, had he not had that collapse.
Yeah.
He's won an AT&T.
Yeah, exactly. He would have replaced Graham, and there you'd have your, everybody would have won both that's ever won here. But that said, I mean, I think if you look through, those are some pretty straight hitters, good drivers of the ball. I think you're going to have to be a really, really good driver of the ball that week. And so I think, as much as, you know, I think Mickelson can be a crowd favorite and a potential favorite, I think, you know, for him, that might be a tougher road, because his driving accuracy isn't quite where it needs to be, probably. So it's going to make it tougher for him to pull off the win. So, you know, you're going to have to find somebody that's hitting it pretty straight off the tee.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the person that really does it at that point. And maybe somebody that hits it fairly high with their approach shots, just because I know some wind can hurt that. But with the firmness of the greens, that tends to help a little.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, yeah, Phil, obviously, great approach player. I mean, legendary. But that rough with where it'll be, of the holes that have been narrowed, what hole do you think it makes the biggest impact on, from say just from your playing?
Yeah, I think 8 is incredible. If you look at 8, if you see 8 and it's normal, I mean, that is such a wide fairway on a normal day, and now it's like a bacon strip, way over to the right, way over by the cliff, and it's fantastic. I mean, it is just gorgeous. But that's a tough spot to hit. And if, I mean, you think about a guy, again, think about a Phil. He's got to probably hit a little bit of a draw there, which is kind of scary. Does that get away with you? Yeah, because it goes down and runs from him. So you know, are you going to aim way, way right on the edge of the cliff and cut it back? So, and hitting that ball out of that thick rough, you know, you catch it a little bit heavy. There's nothing there to save it except the Pacific Ocean.
Nothing to save it but the Pacific Ocean.
There you have it. See?
Yes, it's going to give it a nice... it's
got clean
a,
your ball.
Got a long tumble down to it.
Exactly. Too. It'll stay on the rocks and be safe, but it, yeah.
As far as operations go, from your perspective, mm-hmm. how does it being a U.S. Open year change your day-to-day?
You know, well, again, we're extremely busy. Like normal, you know, we've got a lot of play here. I think there's just a buzz and an excitement, there is in the staff, and that translates to the guests and our resort guests as well. And I think they feel it too, you know, operationally day to day, you know, there's not a major impact at the moment, but you know, it's certainly coming. We're all kind of, you know, buckling down and getting ready to, put on a great show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. So, with the week of, do you guys work in the shop, or how's that work? You know, I know they got the big merchandise tent, but yeah. then what is the Pebble Beach staff role?
Yeah, so it's funny that you ask. I was just asked that question this morning as well in a different meeting, and but you know, my team is going to do a lot with the player services portion and working with you know, just kind of all of the ancillary stuff that involves some of the players, you know, mm-hmm. your locker room areas and driving range. You know, there's going to be a couple cart barns. We've got to manage all those facilities. And of course, we'll also be working through the shop. The shop generally is just open for the players. So it some of the traffic is mm-hmm. a little different than normal, but we still have to man that too. So, yeah.
Does the rest of the resort remain like operational? Are people playing at Spanish Bay and Spyglass at that time?
Yeah, there's shotguns at both places, double shotguns. There's morning and afternoon, and there's, you know, some corporate play, and there's resort play and all kinds of play. So, yes, the golf is happening everywhere.
Golf is all around us.
Golf is around us. We are in it.
You ever seen that Love Actually?
No.
Oh, it made me think of, they sing this song, Christmas is around us, golf is around
golf.
Us.
Maybe we could have our own song. There you go.
you could rip it. It was a rip-off of another song, so it would fit perfectly.
Well, if I say I never heard of it, it's not really stealing it then.
Yeah, exactly. You just play stupid.
That's what I'm good at.
Yeah. So you watch thousands of guests come through. On a daily basis, hundreds on a daily basis.
Yeah,
right. What would you say is the thing that you would recommend most that might be a little off the radar when you come to Pebble?
Is in terms of just coming in and playing,
resort guest?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is get here, plan far enough in advance to do all the things, and give yourself a little bit of time, right? Give yourself the time, the extra time you need, because as we talked about earlier, it's an emotional experience. Like I said, there's a lot of people that have saved for a long time to get here, or they've won a contest with their company, or they're on a their client, you know, they're it's client golf, whatever, and it's just a heightened experience because of where it is, right? And so, you know, you want to get here a little bit earlier. Give yourself time to kind of get around the property, absorb some of that energy, absorb some of that, just that feeling, just to kind of let it subside a little, you know, come in, make sure you have time to have a little bit of breakfast and just, you know, hit some range balls and just kind of get comfortable because, you know, as you said before, you know, your first time, when you're standing on that tee and you're going to be nervous. Mm-hmm. If it's your first time, you're going to be nervous. I mean, I still get butterflies walking on that, because it's such a special spot. You know, you're going to embark on this little journey and play this fantastic golf course where everybody's been, and you can feel the history.
How many times have you played Pebble?
On the record?
On the record. Off the record.
Well, I only play twice a year.
Off the record. Yeah.
No, we get out there and. As appropriate.
Yeah.
But it's never as much as you'd like it to be.
No.
Right? It's never as much. A golf course like that, it's just begging for you to play. And I'd love to play every day.
There's only a few people that have a job where they play too much golf. know, where they...
Well, I don't have
like,
that one.
Yeah, I don't either.
I can promise you that is my one problem I don't have.
Yeah, that's like where this week I played 3 days in a row. I'm like, I played too much golf this week. I haven't been doing enough work. It's an awful feeling.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well, when you get older too, it starts to hurt as well. That's even better. So now... Mm-hmm. Now it even hurts after too many days in a row. That's when you know you played too much, when you can't, pick up the club the fourth day.
Yeah. You got any tricks of the trade? You know, what are some insider tips for playing, we'll say playing Pebble, you know, dining at around the resort, mm-hmm. and maybe one off-campus thing to do?
Well, insider is simply, you know, the best way to be here is to just to stay and have the full experience. You know, trying to work around things you don't get the full experience. I mean, yeah. The resort's all freshly renovated as well, which is exciting for us at this time. You know, we're finishing up our renovation. The rooms are gorgeous. The golf courses are fantastic. I mean, you just got to do the whole, just dive in and get into the whole experience. We got a 5-star spa. I mean, why do you need to go? That's the insider, is call up our reservation line and just treat yourself to a great, you know, weekend, week, 2 weeks, whatever you want to stay. We'll put you up and play golf.
Yeah.
I mean, where else would you rather be, right?
Yeah, there's a few places. Mrs. Friedeck liked the spa a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and then the dining, you know, dining wise, I mean, the resort, wonderful, wonderful dining, great offerings. I mean, the tap room is a can't miss. You know, I love the tap room personally. Great steaks. It's just a wonderful spot to have a nice glass of red wine and a great steak. Pepoli's fantastic. They've got this Tuscan Italian cuisine that is unbelievable. You have the ossobuco there, and you won't eat it anywhere else. It's just that good. So it's unique. We've got all so many great things here. So why go somewhere else? You just come here and you're done. That's it.
It's a good company man right there. Just come.
Well,
stay,
I mean, where else?
Stay 2 weeks.
Yeah, stay 2 weeks. Eat everywhere, morning, day, and night. Play the golf, and then you know,
that'd be heaven. So you got parking for, and you did this for the last time the open came, mm-hmm. on your par 3 course on the Peter Hay.
Yeah, that's actually, no, that's not, it's not a parking. That's not parking. That'll
infrastructure.
Be the infrastructure there will be, that's going to be some retail tents and things, uh-huh. of that nature. So that'll really be the grand entrance as people come through.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine with the flow and traffic of people coming in, there's just not the parking here to facilitate that. And so everybody parks off site.
Yeah.
Gets bussed in that has their tickets. And then there's a, you know, so that creates a grand entrance opportunity. And really, it's a great way to experience kind of coming into the open and kind of landing at the first tee at Pebble Beach.
So what's the plan after with the par 3 course?
Oh, we'll, you know, once the tournament's done, we'll put that back together. And mm-hmm. we'll have another great par 3 course ready to go again.
This is kind of cool for guests that have been here. It'll be completely different, right?
We're still in the planning stages, so we'll see exactly how that pans out. If we, you know, we're definitely going to look at some design options, but yeah, it'll be a great return to Peter Hay.
As far as playing, are you going to try and play in the U.S. Open? You doing qualifying?
No, you know, I'm not.
Going to be kind of busy.
Yeah. You know, I've got wife and 2 kids, and I figure I ought to continue to be able to afford paying for them or helping them along, you know, paying for the house payment, making that probably a better idea to do that than try to do the whole thing, play and all that. But it would be a great honor, to be honest, obviously. But yeah, I'm not going to try and qualify at this point.
Just sticking to beating up on the Northern California guys. Huh?
That's it. Yeah.
You know,
I don't know if I can even do that anymore. That was a long time. 10 years ago now.
Maybe they need a marker. Maybe you'll get out there with the marker.
I've got a pen. They need a marker.
Yeah. So, Eric, thanks so much for coming on. We're really excited to look forward at the U.S. Open this year. It'll be, what an amazing venue, amazing history.
Yeah.
Who's your pick? We're picking this on, I don't know, March 20th.
March 20th? Sentimental pick, I'm going to go with Phil Mickelson.
Yeah,
just in the fact, I just think that it would be a great tie-in. You know, he wins that. He's, you know, it's Father's Day, number one. Yeah. He's a great, you know, family man. He always has his wife and his kids around. And I want to say it might be his birthday.
Really?
Well, I believe it's his birthday, too.
Look at this research.
So I think that would be pretty cool for him, right? And then, mm-hmm. I mean, and then do you just do the mic drop if you're Phil Mickelson? Because what it also does is it closes out his
Grand Slam.
His Grand Slam. Yeah. And so you kind of hit three of the best keys, you know, milestones you can. I mean, you almost have to just say, hey, that's Mickelson out.
Yeah. He should just retire then.
That's right. Well, maybe.
I don't
But
think
whoever does.
Yeah.
You know, golf, football, all those. I mean, it's just so hard to leave and think that you got to respect like a Peyton Manning, right? Mm-hmm. He wins and then that's probably it.
Yeah.
You know, he gets sometimes, you know, and I'm not that Phil Mickelson doesn't have maybe a win or two left in him, but it would be hard to think that he would, he'd have a lot of majors
I
left.
Nobody's won the AT&T and the U.S. Open the same year when it was
Tiger
here.
Woods.
Oh, he did?
2000.
Oh, shit. You're ready. Was that the year he came back on was it Goggin? And that, who was the year
in 2000? All right. Well, now I'm not sure. So that's a good question. So you've stumped me there.
He had that, but one year he won the AT&T from like seven behind in the final round.
It might have
right
been that year.
There.
It might have been that year. He was kind of doing that to everybody, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Those were good years. So thanks so much for coming on, and look forward to this. And when people are here at Pebble, they can come in and say hi.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, please do.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.